So thank you, Dr. Woodruff.
Thank you, Dr. Jansen and Dr. Girona. It's
that was very technical, and I just want you to know I learned something from that presentation that you give every time. So you just have to keep coming back and listening to us talk about this, and you will be an expert analytic chemist too, like myself. So, but I just want to reemphasize some of the key points that Dr. Girona raised, which is right now we only have the ability to measure about 1% of the chemicals that are being, about 1% of chemicals are being biomonitored through these targeted approaches. And what do we mean by a targeted approach? We decide a priori which chemicals we're going to measure, and then we go and look and see if they're in a serum sample or a urine sample. So this requires that we have to decide ahead of time in terms of deciding what we're going to look for. And as Dr. Girona pointed out, that's a little tricky because there are 3,000 chemicals that are produced or manufactured or imported in the United States and over 1 million pounds per year. So there's a universe potentially of 3,000 plus the many other thousands that could be around us in terms of environmental exposures. So this is where we're getting into a new area of looking at exposures. And so this idea about looking at this agnostic approach to screening for exposures to environmental chemicals has been labeled as part of the exposome, which was published in a paper in Science in 2010 by Steve Rappaport and Martin Smith, which is essentially, rather than deciding what are we going to look for first, what if we switch the question and say, what could we find in a biological sample? Now, we're focusing on environmental chemicals. The exposome actually not only focuses on environmental chemicals, but also looking at other markers of general environmental exposure, such as protein addicts or DNA addicts and those kinds of markers. But we are going to look at just the environmental chemical signatures in this project. And as Dr. Girona described, we have an LCMS time of flight module. This part is, I'm going to spend just 1 minute talking about this because it seems like this should be so obvious, but yes, this has caused us much time in terms of figuring this out. So in the LCMS, we take the biological sample. Well, I don't do this. Dr. Girona takes the biological sample. He puts it in the machine. All those things are ionized. They run through the time of flight. The little ones are way less, and the bigger ones that go slower, way more, and we get this molecular weight. Well, that's what we get. We don't know how to take the molecular and figure out what's the chemical. So if you all came in the room and I figured out how much you each weighed, and that's all I had, and then I had these weights and I tried to figure out who you were, I wouldn't be able to do that unless I had your name and your weight next to it, which I'm not going to ask you to do. But that's just basically what we have is a bunch of weights. So we had to go out and say, well, how do we figure out what these molecular weights are? And we created a database we called Chemosome. Now, I know you're probably thinking, that should be so easy, it's just on Google, right? But it's not. What really is going on is that we need to have these chemical formulas that we then feed into the machine. It figures out the molecular weight and then matches it to what we get out of the run through the LCMS. And it turns out that this is actually a name of a chemical, where it comes from, and its chemical formula is actually not an available database via any place we have found. And if you know some place, please let us know, because we've spent a lot of time and resources developing this, because it turns out if you just get a bunch of molecular weights, it's very useless to try and figure out what those chemicals are. So the Chemosome database has right now 5,000 chemicals in it. I will say we are going to focus on, in this analysis, 700 of them. We have put together this database from many different types of sources. We look at what's already biomonitored in the literature. We take high-priority chemicals that have been identified through other places like Prop 65 in California, some places through EPA. We've tried to use the TSCA inventory, and I will say that that has been not very successful, but we have figured out ways to go pick and choose through that. So it is actually a non-trivial exercise to put this together. So in this talk, I'm going to talk about one subset of this group, which we call environmental organic acids. These are organic compounds that have at least one ionizable proton, which I know you all know what that means from the last talk. But they're basically chemicals that have a negative polarity and are structurally similar to endocrine disrupting chemicals. So there's pesticides in this group. The phenols, which Dr. Girona talked about in his last talk, so the parabens, BPA, those chemicals are in this group, as well as phthalates, and then some of the metabolites of PCBs and PBDEs. Again, these are the ones that we have put into our database. There may be more here, but that's what we're covering. So this group, so we start with 5,000. We're really going to focus on the data we have for 729. And over 80% of these chemicals that are in this group of 729 are not actively biomonitored. So what do they look like? Pointer. Do you have a pointer? Thank you. So we have the environmental phenols, which I talked about. We have 177 environmental phenols that we're going to scan our biological sample for. This is plastics, food storage containers. Phthalates and phthalate metabolites, maybe most of you in the room know what those are, but they come from personal care products, detergents. Well, they're not really, some of them are not in children's toys anymore. Perfluorinated chemicals, which is the chemicals that give a non-stick property, so non-stick cooking or stain-resistant fabrics. It's used in many, many different, these are just examples, many different types of sources. We have the metabolites of PBDEs, which are polybrominated diphenyl ethers, or flame retardants found in foam, electronic, so furniture. And it's interesting, so we have like 200 phenols. We have a lot of pesticides in this database because it turns out there is a commercial database available that gives us molecular formulas and pesticides. So we happen to have 400 pesticides in this database, which I think is somewhat gives us a great opportunity to look for pesticides, but it's a little bit of an artifact of the database. So the pilot study. Our goal here was to take this very exciting new technology and apply it to some biological samples. We have several ongoing studies working with a patient population at San Francisco General Hospital that consists of pregnant women who are seeking care at San Francisco General Hospital. And we are looking to them to collect biological samples for this study. We have serum samples that we've collected from this patient population. And our goal is to take those samples and run them through the machine and see what kind of detects we get from those chemicals. So we have 20 samples that comprise this pilot study. Again, we run them through the machine, we analyze them for the molecular weights, we back match them to see how many of that 729 from our database are present in these samples, and then the next phase after this, which we are actually working on, is we pick several to do confirmatory analysis, which is essentially develop the standards and confirm the amount and levels of those chemicals. So this is the composition of our participants in our study. They are a diverse group of women. I don't have the data here but on this slide, but they are primarily low-income women. San Francisco General Hospital in San Francisco serves primarily low-income population. It's about 40% African American, 20% Caucasian, 23% Latina, and about 10% Asian. So here's what we found first. When we look, okay, we have 729 possible hits that we can get from this run through our TOF LC-MS. And what we see is, and here's all the individual participants along here, so there's 20 bars, one for every pregnant woman who is a participant in our study. And this is the number of hits that we find. So these are a number of potential chemicals that we find within each of these serum samples. So you can see our baseline starts at 189. So these women have, just starting off the bat, probably somewhere upwards of 150 of the 729 that we could possibly scan for. And then it goes up here. We have them in order of how many we find, up to about 264. So we're finding potentially 150 to 270 different chemicals that could potentially be present in these pregnant women. So here's a breakdown of what kinds of things that we're getting hits for and how this compares to the chemicals that are measured in NHANES. So as I said, we have phenols. I'll just focus here. So phenols is one of the groups that we have 177 potential numbers. You can see we're getting most of our hits around for phenols, and then pesticides and metabolites. And if you remember when I was talking about how the database is constructed, while we anticipate that there are these 90 or so pesticides that we could be in there in the serum samples, it's somewhat an artifact of the fact that we do also have a lot of pesticides in this database. So just keep that in mind. But 100 of these are phenols. So the other thing is the blue is what we find through the non-targeted analysis. This red here is how many of these chemicals are measured in NHANES. So you can get right here an idea about, well, NHANES is looking about at 20 pesticides and their metabolites. We're finding potentially 90, so about 70 more that may be present in these serum samples. Similarly with the phenols, the phthalates, and the metabolites. What's interesting here is for the perfluorinated chemicals, we're about even in terms of NHANES. So NHANES measures for 13. We're finding about 12. Part of this, we think, is potentially there is some variation in the sensitivity of the machine to pick up certain chemicals. And we think that because these are found in smaller amounts, generally, that there may be some sensitivity going on with this one. And then we find some metabolites of PCBs and PBDEs. And then to give you an idea of, I kind of showed you the number, but just to go back to, well, how many of these chemicals are in our database. So you see of the phenols, which I said we found 63, oh, this is looking at the highly detected chemicals. So if we look at the chemicals that are found in greater than 25% of the pregnant women, so sort of the high frequency chemicals that we're finding, we're about a third of them are, of the 177, about a third of them are phenols. You're seeing, we see a little bit less on the pesticides, but still about 30 pesticides. A lot of the metabolites, a lot of the phthalates are found. So even though we don't have that many phthalates in our database, we're still finding a really relatively high detection frequency of the phthalates in the serum samples. So that's how we, so that gives you an idea, but that's what we're finding in terms of the detection frequencies for the 729 possible candidate chemicals that we could find in these serum samples. Then what we have to do is go back and do a targeted analysis to determine a presence, to confirm the presence, and then that's how we get the amount. What are the levels of those actual chemicals? And so for this round, we are focusing on three different chemicals to go back and do a targeted analysis that Dr. Drone is doing a targeted analysis for. One is 2-sec-butylphenol, which is in the pesticide group. We're looking at 4-nonylphenol, which has sources of, can be found in pesticides, but also industrial detergents and plasticizers, and benzophenone 1, which is nail polish, enamel, and sunscreen. So we'll be able to, so the idea is we'll be able to go back. We already detected those in a number of pregnant women. We'll be able to go back and see, one thing, how predictive is the time of flight technology? Because we have these hits, but we want to go back and see how accurate is our hit ratio. So first we'll go and look at another 20 samples, run it through the time of flight, see if we get the same number of hits, and then use the targeted LCMS to see did we get pretty close in terms of our prediction with the time of flight LCMS. And then we'll also be able to tell what the level is, which we can't quite do with the technology, though the phthalates does give us some idea about perhaps extending the time of flight analysis even farther so we can get an idea of levels without having to go through the targeted analysis. And so where we are now is we're doing another 20 samples based on what we've seen here to extend in terms of the target analysis and do some confirmatory comparisons between what we're seeing with the time of flight and the targeted analysis. And then also the other advantage of this, so I talked about 729 chemicals, which is our universe, but we really have 5,000 in our database. So the next step is to also go back and rescan the serum samples with the other essentially 4,000 candidate chemicals in the different ionization mode and see what other things come up when we do that. So I'd like to thank everybody at the Program on Reproductive Health and the Environment. We should put you in here, Roy, because you're really an honorary member, and some of the people here in the room who've been very helpful in making this happen. And I'd like to thank everybody. Oh, this didn't load my slide. Especially from the Passport Science Innovation Fund, which was the funder of this pilot study. Thank you.
What is the difference between your 700
Yeah, so there's two questions. What we focused on 729 for doing, for looking at the molecular weights in the samples that we had. So what about the other 4,000, which is somewhat a feature of the different ionization. Remember, I don't know if you remember the part there was a negative mode and a positive mode. So part of it is we've only really focusing in the negative mode. So we haven't actually done the whole universe of possible testing, which you probably want to talk a little bit more about that. I'm going to get out of that.
If I may add some more from what Tracy has been discussing in terms of answering that particular question. So the one thing that I pointed out is there are several different types of ionization, right? You can ionize in the positive mode, and that would bias your universe of chemicals that you can actually look for say, amine-containing pesticides, right? So those that have functional groups that ionize in the positive modes, amines, alcohols, right? And then there is also, say, a negative polarity, which biases carboxylic acids, phenolic compounds, right? So the 729 that we have are environmental organic acid. They either contain carboxyl, phenolic, sulfonic, and phosphonic acid, right? The other 4,000 are chemicals that have the potential to actually ionize in the positive mode, like amine-containing pesticide, organometals like organotenes. And so if we requery the data, we've also run this in the positive mode. If we requery the data that we have already, the total ion chromatogram that we have already collected, then we are bound to find another set of chemicals that might be high detection frequency chemicals in the positive mode. The difference between GCMS and LC-MS-MS is that in the GCMS and LC-MS-MS, you can only look for compounds that you have developed a method for already. Here, you are actually trying, you're able to detect all potential chemicals. It's a full scan. It's not a targeted scan where you only have, say, a panel of 10, and you will only be looking for that particular panel. Does that answer?
You get out of a line of peaks around all the molecular weights that could be in there, and then we're going back and looking at them. Sorry. So we basically get out a chromatogram that has all these different peaks in it. It could be 10,000 peaks. Right now we have the ability to see, match it to we focus on 700, but we do have the potential for 5,000. I would say that there's an iterative process that comes about with taking our database, matching it, and then re-looking and trying to analyze all the data that happens. And so we have most analyzed the 729 chemicals that we have in the database. But as Roy was saying, we can go back and re-query the remaining 4,000 in this other mode, which we will be doing. Well, yeah, so the chemosome database is whatever we decide to put in it. So, yes, we have worked with PBDEs a lot, and we know about the substitutes, so it includes a lot of the substitutes. One of the challenges is, what about the metabolites, right? So we have the parent compounds, which you don't see in this mode because they are going to show up in the positive mode, not in this scan, which is on the negative mode. So one of the things is we've been putting the substitutes in, but I think we have some of the metabolites in there,
yeah.
Right? But I don't know if we predicted all of them.
So for the pesticides, we actually predicted metabolites of some pesticides. So
some
if we see an aromatic ring, most likely it will be hydroxylated, and therefore it becomes a phenolic compound. And that's the reason why there is a huge number of pesticides and pesticide metabolites in there. So those are predicted metabolites. So we do have some metabolites. We haven't covered all the metabolites, and again, that again is an area of possible expansion in the future.
Right. It is the most complicated thing to do, too, in some ways, because we have to kind of BPS is a perfect example, right? Biphenyl sulfates being a substitute for BPA, but then we have to then it's metabolized. What are the metabolites? You know, we have to go and dig around and try and figure out what metabolites should be put in there. We can put in the obvious ones, but sometimes there are new ones that, like when we were doing BPA, you had the BPA chloride, right,
yes,
that came up. So it's sort of an iterative process to track some of these down.
Plus, this is serum. And so the conjugated forms are not included in the database. It's something that we haven't put in. Right. So once we start querying for urine, for example, then we will be adding on a host of different chemical formula based on conjugation or sulfation. I agree that there are potentially conjugated compounds also in the serum, but we are not at that stage yet, that level of complexity yet, where we would add conjugated metabolites of all these chemicals. I mean, there's just a lot to work on. And how many are we?
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little bit? Yes, and then that's in the database because we work with it. Yeah. We already know it, so that one's easy. The farther afield you get to ones that are substitutes where we have less information on, it's a little more challenging for us to. It takes more time to work through them and get them in database. The figure of substitute flame retardants is a good example. Then we have to try and imagine all the metabolites and. Anyway, it's consuming, so. Yes, sorry. We could talk about this all day, though.
We could talk about it all day. And I'm sure everyone would love to.
Maybe not.